I'm so glad you're here. We're finishing up this series on how to wreck your life. I hope you figured out how to do that. I don't think any of you had to really have lessons from me, because we can all figure out ways to wreck our lives. And I hope you understand. Some of you are kind of literal people. I hope you understand we're talking sarcasm here a little bit. And so we're kind of going the opposite of really what you want, what we want you to do. But and so we're looking at this whole idea here of dissatisfied. And actually, you know what? I don't know if you know the trivia. Of course, there's a lot of different ones. And you can't trust all these deals. But MTV, one of their deals, the top rock song of all time was from the Rolling Stones. And I think you'll know the rest of the title. I ain't got no... You know your cultural Bible well. Again, thank you very much. You know these things. Good. I remember as a kid, my dad given me a bicycle, and it was it's a bike I'd had all along. We didn't have a lot of money. And when I owned it, it was like a 40-year-old bicycle. And in my time, when I was a kid, there were what were called banana seats for a bicycle and stingray handles, okay? And so what he did for Christmas is he put a banana seat and stingray handles on this 40-year-old bicycle for me, and I thought it was the coolest thing in the world. And so I went out on Christmas Day and started riding my bike around, and then I noticed the other kids in the neighborhood had real stingray bicycles, which had what was called the slick tire in the back, big, thick, wide tire, little skinny tire in the front. And then I started looking at my bike, and it didn't look quite as good to me as it used to, because I had a big fat tire in the front, which is cool for these days, but it wasn't back then. And so I was feeling kind of dissatisfied. So we all raced, and I was around 11 years old, sixth grade, and got all this stuff done. And so we had a race, and I won the race. And so I was feeling a lot better. All my friends are in kindergarten, though, so that kind of took away from the win. But we can just be dissatisfied. See toddlers. Yeah, you can look here at New Life and you see toddlers that learn how to grab toys and play with them. You have a little bit older toddler than a younger toddler, and they're happy just one toy. They're sitting there, and the older toddler is happy with their toy till they look over at the younger toddler, and then what do they want to do? They want to go over and grab their toy too, don't they? And then they have a toy in each hand, and then the younger toddler grabs something else and they're content, and then there's a dilemma. Because they're not satisfied with what's in this hand and this hand, and so they're trying to hang on to these things and grab even the other toy from the toddler. We don't outgrow this. This is part of a human nature thing. At my high school reunion, I remember kind of seeing the one-upmanship thing going on just a little bit about, where do you live now? Oh, you know, we live in Moraga, you know, which is a good place to live, or just name a place, and someone else will go, oh, yeah, we live there too, but we also live in Hawaii, you know. And so you'd have these different things happening, and one guy saying, yeah, you know, I retired this year, around $200,000 a year at age of 50, you know. And then other people, you could just almost see them taking notes. And people that walked into the high school reunion kind of satisfied in a lot of ways, walked out of that same high school reunion, I'm a loser. Or, wow, are they a loser? And I'm a winner compared to them. And there's just a lot of this brinkmanship thing that goes on. It's part of our human nature. And so Paul says here, and he wrote this to a young leader, look at your New Life notes, these little things right here, pull this out. And he says something that is phenomenal, because 2,000 years ago, he had a lot of the same things. He said, but godliness with contentment is great gain. Meaning this, you're not born with it. You're born with a spirit of dissatisfaction, and learning this idea of contentment is huge. But because he says a statement, you'll see this in Job, you'll see this actually in some ancient philosophers, the same type thing, one of them, Cicero, okay? And it's this, we brought nothing into the world, and we could take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with that. And you're going, really? Just food and clothing? Well, if you live in some parts of Japan right now, you'd be very content with food and clothing. It's all a matter of perspective, is it not? And so that's what we're looking at today. There's another passage here in Luke, and this is Jesus' perspective. We're going to look at this in just a few minutes. But what I would like to do then is kind of put on the sarcasm cap one more time and talk about how you can wreck your life and how you can be dissatisfied if you want to, okay? So you're ready for that. So at our venues, Video Venue, our Horizons campus, let's all get our notes out and let's get focused in on this right now. So if you really just want to be dissatisfied, the first thing is become great at being ungrateful. Become great at, some of you aren't good at it yet, but you can work on it. Become great at being ungrateful. Ignore passages like this. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, fascinating in light of the recent earthquakes, huh? A kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe. So what you want to do to be ungrateful is only think of now. What is going on right now is the only thing that is really important. Don't think of anything about eternity. Because if you start to think in terms of that, then you might start to see a bigger picture. So just focus on what now. And what you focus on right now is what you don't have. Not things you have. To focus on the things that you don't have. Ignore God's goodness in your life. Ignore things like you might have health if you have children. Ignore that whole thing, and instead focus on the promotion you didn't get. Some of you might be married, and if you have someone married and they actually love you, you know, just take that for granted because you're a very lovable person, okay? And just take that for granted. Instead, focus on maybe that you don't have granite counters in your kitchen instead. And you just went over to your friend's house and just got their kitchen and bathrooms done, come home, and kind of squeeze a little tear out of your face as your two kids are going, "Hi, Mommy, so glad you're home." Ignore them. Instead, cry that you don't have granite counters. That's a really good thing if you want to live your life dissatisfied. So you got that one down. Or if you don't want to live your life dissatisfied, what you can do right now is scratch out the un part on your notes, which then you'd say become great at being grateful. So if you don't want to be dissatisfied, scratch out the un part on your notes, all right? But here's another one. If you want to be dissatisfied, compare what you have to people who have more. So it says here, we do not dare to classify or compare ourselves with some who commend themselves. By the way, this passage is sarcastic too. When they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are not wise. Okay, that's, you know, it's like they just compare their whole life with each other and define that as success. But what you can do is this. Whenever you're satisfied with something, start thinking of something that's better. If you're starting to feel satisfied with the home you live in, start walking through model homes or watch HGTV or whatever you can do to see all the biggest and the brightest and the latest and the coolest and whatever, and you will start to feel more and more dissatisfied. You know, if you're starting to get along with your spouse, if you're married, start to compare husbands, you know? Compare your husband to someone else's husband. Compare your wife to someone else's wife. And then keep this dialogue going in your mind. Well, they're not like that. They don't seem to be as nice as they are. And keep a good list of things, or compare kids is another one. You know, your kid's doing this, my kid's doing this. All of these things, compare salaries, check out new cars. You know, you might be happy with the car you're at, but I tell you what, when you get into a brand new car, and guys, come on, the smell of a brand new car, if they could bottle that, you know what I mean? It's a nice thing. Or compare vacations. You know, maybe you always go with your family somewhere or your friends, and you always have this little simple beach you go to. And then listen to your friends that talk about they've been to that new Harry Potter deal in Orlando, Florida, and spent 2 weeks there and whatever. And then start to compare your vacations, and you will become dissatisfied. Does that make sense to you? Does that make sense? So, or what you can do, don't compare with what you have with people that have more. If you want to be satisfied, just put the word don't Write the word don't in front of that. If you want to become satisfied in life, don't compare. Don't compare with others around you. Or pursue temporary possessions over eternal treasures. Pursue temporary possessions or promotions over eternal treasures. Watch out. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. And of course, no American really believes that. It's the guy that has just a little bit more that's into his possessions. But not any of us. Not any of us. So, make sure you pursue possessions that are not eternal. And so if you're kind of getting bored with things around you, what you do and kind of satisfied, look at the latest upgrades. And maybe you could look at the latest upgrades on your iPad. And as you're looking on your iPad, you're going, what? You'll see that there's an iPad 2 out. And you know what the iPad 2 is? It's 0.3 millimeters thinner than the iPad 1. Did you know that? And they make a big deal. And it now, instead of that kind of gun barrel gray metal, it comes in white plastic and black plastic. Did you know that? And you found out. And what you can find out for those, someone said no at the first service. Okay. But did you know that they have an iPad 3 right around the corner coming out this fall? Okay. I can't get no. Yeah, you can't keep up with all these things. I saw an advertisement on that. Someone getting a 3D television, you know, brought into their house, and they see someone across the street, you know, says 4D TV, you know, and they're just kind of, you know, you can't keep up. And that's good. Then you can be dissatisfied all of the time. You might be satisfied at your work, and then for some reason, there's a reason why people don't want to know what other people are being paid. For some reason, you might find out someone else is making 50 cents an hour more than you, and all of a sudden, you're no longer satisfied. Don't you see this in the sports world all the time? You know, I'm only making $8 million. I'm only making $250,000 a game. See? And my friend here, man, they are making $270,000 a game. That's a disrespect to me, okay? We're going, really? That's a good place to be if you want to be dissatisfied. So, and then what you can do if you want to be satisfied is flip-flop those. That is, pursue heavenly treasures instead of earthly things. It doesn't mean dismiss earthly things. It doesn't mean earthly things are wrong. To have temporary possessions here are wrong. It never says that. But if you really want to get a perspective on this, sometimes I look at old magazines, you know, when I'm in a thrift store, and like these old Life magazines, you can open them up like from 1952 or something, and you see someone there, and they have all this language about the new Ford Mercury. You know, 1952, and you know, the latest thing out, and it has an audio radio, you know, and it's just like, and people just, you know, crave these things at the time, and yet it had a coolness just for a very short time. You know, I wanted to find my Nextel phone. It's somewhere, but I still have it. But it was one of the first to have the flip-up things, and I had a really cool antenna that I could pull out, and it had a leather case. And it was a really small phone for the time. You know, it went from the top of my head down over to here. And I could look really cool and executive with that thing. And now, of course, you have the iPad 10 or whatever's out now. I don't know. And so, no, the iPhone 10. And so, you know, but so the point here is if you want to be dissatisfied, just keep focused on, there will always be new, greater, and better temporary possessions, you guys. And as long as you keep chasing those, you'll be dissatisfied. Or you can flip-flop those things. Or resent God for where you are in life. Don't think about that maybe there are consequences. Think in terms of this. Think in terms of, what the scripture says. You our God, my stronghold, why have you rejected me? Why must I go about mourning, oppressed by the enemy? And always have that attitude toward God. Always just say, God, I'm not where I want to be in life. What is up? You know, I've tried to do some things for you, or at least I've stayed out of your way. How come you're interfering with what I'm trying to do in my life? And have a really short memory about decisions you've made, how you've treated other people, maybe unwise investments, whatever, because you're just trying to get ahead. You're trying to get something for nothing because you deserve it, okay? And so you start to have all these things go on. And so where you're at financially and your relationships, just ignore all those decisions and things that got the consequences of where you're at now, and then blame God. Blame God for those things. If you want to be dissatisfied, do that. Or instead of the word resent, see your notes there? Resent God for where you are in life. Cross out the word resent and write in the word trust. Trust God for where you are in life. It's your choice. It's your choice. And then develop an attitude of entitlement. I deserve this. I'm a good person. I've worked hard. I should be able to have what I want, when I want it, how I want it, within reason. Of course, defining what within reason. But it says here, for the wages of sin is death. And that is their consequences. That is, if you want to ignore the whole God thing and then expect God to just come in and do whatever, but just keep this idea, I deserve more, I deserve a better house, better boats, whatever it is. You know, by the time my dad is 40 years old, he's on his third boat, and I'm only on my second boat, okay? And have a mindset that you're entitled to these things. Look, if you're dismissing me, says John's against boats or whatever, you're not hearing me, okay? Okay, it's just this whole thing that we can invest so much in just what's temporary. Okay, I'm retiring now from the sarcasm thing. I'll probably never, you know, do a series with this much sarcasm again, because it's hard. It's hard to kind of reverse your thinking on this. And it's kind of like if you're a Raider fan cheering for the Steelers, you know what I mean? And so it's just reversing how things are. So the point of this series, and it's kind of the last thing you have on your notes here, is how we live reveals what we believe. And so now I want to focus on Luke just a little bit. Jesus' words here, how we live really does reveal what we believe. And this is Jesus' story on this. There's a couple of guys that were really just at each other over in the context of this passage before Jesus starts telling this story in Luke chapter 12. Someone comes up to Jesus, my brother and I are arguing over an inheritance. Have you ever known anyone like that? I've seen some ugly funeral and deals afterwards, man, when people are arguing over what's left by, you know, Papa or whatever. And so Jesus saw through this, and this is where he told the story, because he saw really behind this was some greed. And he told them this parable. Look at your notes here. The ground of a certain rich man produced a good crop. Notice he didn't say the rich man produced a good crop. What did he say? He said the ground of the rich man produced a good crop. We can call ourselves self-made people, but we live on a planet that has gravity and air and water. It has all kinds of things, and it has an atmosphere that keeps all kind of radiation from coming in, just killing us all. Well, I wonder who keeps that whole thing going. And so as this planet is spinning, we're able to run around and toot our own horn saying, I'm a self-made man. I'm a self-made woman. The ground produced the crop. He thought to himself. Now, what I want you to do here as I read this, I want you to circle every time you see the word I or my or mine, okay? What shall I do? I have no place to store my bumper crops. Then he said, this is what I'll do. I will tear down my barns and build bigger ones, and there I will store all my grain and my goods. I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. That's what he said to himself. But notice, God had something to say in this. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded of you. And that's the end of the story. And Jesus says, this is how it will be with anyone who stores up things for himself. Now notice this little word in my translation says this, store up things for yourself, but is not rich toward God. It doesn't say who stores up things for yourself instead of storing up things for God. It doesn't say that, does it? There is never condemnation for this man owning barns. There's never condemnation for him being rich or for storing up things for himself. It was, if you are doing this, but you're neglecting the bigger and the better picture in your life, that's where the condemnation is, okay? So really, this guy, there were two things about him that affect us in satisfaction in our life. And the first is this, he never saw beyond himself. He saw the crops growing in the ground. I am so good. You know, I went out there and I told this little plant, grow bigger. And it listened to me because I'm important. Rain, fall out of the sky. Come on, rain. And the skies listen to me. I'm a self-made man. He saw nothing but himself, and he was self-absorbed, full of I, me, my, and mine. That was the mindset. Now, there's a guy named John Wesley. It's interesting how he is completely different here. He lived 1700s in England. He has been credited, if you know your history at all, there was a bloody revolution in France, the French Revolution. England was headed for the same type of bloody revolution. His secular historians credit John Wesley, who was actually a pastor, and he went out and preached to the poor and really connected a lot of these people together, got their lives grounded. They credit him of turning the tide in England from a bloody revolution that they were headed for also, because the poor, their lives got together, they're able to get organized, and actually they became, in the next generation, the dominant party in Parliament, and they're able to address horrible things like slavery and other issues of injustice. But he, when he first started his ministry, I don't know how this equates for us in money, but he made £30 a year early on in his ministry, and he gave £2 away to other people. He became a prolific author and a gigantic movement. In fact, churches like the Methodist Church and actually our denominational roots and many, many others go all the way back to this guy here. But over the years, when he was like a best-selling author, I mean, his books sold everywhere, he personally continued to live on £30 a year. And so when it became like £300 a year that he had, he continued just to give this away. Now, I'm not saying that you have to do that, but what I am saying is that there was a level of satisfaction that he had, that what he had was good enough. But we have a mindset. You guys, do you understand that this is a multi-billion dollar industry in our culture to keep us all dissatisfied with the things that we have? I mean, I understand it. I really do. I understand about, keeping up with the times. But there's a word called fashion. And fashion is, you know, and it's okay, because what's going on with fashion in America is we're clothing the world. Did you know that? I mean, they have there's a whole industry of gigantic bundles of just discarded clothes that we have in the United States that end up being shipped over to the Philippines and over into Africa and places like these. And we're clothing the world with just our discards. But there's this mindset that we can have here. There's a Roman proverb, ancient Roman proverb, that says this, money is like seawater. The more a man drinks, the thirstier that he becomes. And so we end up dissatisfied, and we're saying, God, where are you? Why isn't my life going the way it should be going? Because we have this mindset of what life we think needs to be like. And God says, I have something much greater for you. Much greater for you. In this parable again of the rich man, he never condemns the barns. He never condemns his ambition to have a lot of crops. What he says is when you get caught up that defines your life, and you have this, it just has to be more and more and more and more for you and you and you. Now look, John Wesley had more and more. John Wesley said this, earn all you can, save all you can, give all you can. That's a good motto, isn't it? So it's okay to earn all you can and save all you can, but the connector to that is give all you can also. That's how this all fits together. And then the other part is he never saw beyond his own world. So you can write these down somewhere. How we live reveals what we believe. You can write this little thing down there if you want. He never saw beyond himself. The rich dude never saw beyond himself. And the other thing is he never saw beyond this world. That's all he saw. Now, look, if you're making a decision today that this world is all there is, have at it. My concern is that you might have the shock of your existence someday. And that is a gigantic, gigantic gamble that you're making. Why? Why make such a gamble? Why make such a gamble? It's like there's an older guy listening to a younger guy. And this guy had a lot of ambition, which is great. And the young said, yeah, I want to have a great life. And the older guy says, well, what do you want to do? He goes, well, I'm going to get a trade, and I'm going to really learn this trade well. And the older guy said, what then? He says, well, I'm going to get wealthy. I'm going to make a lot of money. Great. What then? Well, I suppose I'll work really hard and make a lot of money. Then I'll get old like you. And then I suppose I'll retire. Good. What then? Well, I guess I'll die. What then? What then? And that's really the question. That's really what Jesus is at for all of us here. And so there's really just one more thing to fill in, but this is the problem. You know, don't say to me what you believe. Show me what you believe. We can get caught up in this church thing and the church talk thing, but really, just how regular is your worship? How regular is your consistency in all this? Here's the problem right here. Write this in for your blank. This is how we can live. What Christ offers is not as good as what this world offers. That's how we could end up living, really, in our life. We can say whatever we want, but what we live is what Christ offers is not good enough for this world. And so in this series, we talked about how you can wreck your life. And if you remember the first week, how you can wreck your life is just commit adultery. And so you can start with saying, you know, maybe you've been married 8 years or 12 years, and you made those promises, you know, for better, for worse, for richer, for sickness and health, rather, you know, and all this stuff. But somewhere down the line says, you know, I'm just not feeling it the way I was, and I think those promises, I don't know. And I'm smart enough, I'm never going to get caught anyway. And so you end up in bed with someone else. And so really, what you offer is not good enough, and so you look for something else. That's what happens here. With that, or you drift from God. You know, okay, God, I tried the prayer thing, blah, 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 yeah, whatever. But then all of a sudden, things are really shiny out there. And so you just start to just pass on these things. Unless it really gets tough, then you say, oh, I want to grow spiritually. Until things go really good and you build more barns, then all of a sudden, you just kind of shine on things. It's just not good enough. Or what was another one we looked at last week? We talked about addicted, didn't we, last week? And addictions. Well, you know, I like my freedom, God. And you know, I know you're kind of in my life, but I need to really unwind. I need to really relax. And you know, sometimes, you know, just this prayer thing's not doing it for me. And so you have these other things. I need peace and something that will give me a missing, because what you're saying in your actions, Christ is not enough. Christ is not enough. And then what we've looked at today, how to be dissatisfied. How to be dissatisfied. Now, we started out with 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 6 through 8. Some of you have your Bibles. So here's kind of a bonus. There's a couple of verses past that, verses 9 and 10. Verses 9 and 10. So some of you are going to be able to look at that. If you just have your notes, you're not going to be able to. Really, really powerful passage. It says this. Look, Bible blesses ambition, okay? Godly ambitions. But listen to this. People who want to get rich fall into temptation and a trap and into many foolish and harmful desires that plunge men into ruin and destruction. That is, you wreck your life. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Haven't we heard that before? It's right here. This is where you'll find it. Some people eager for money have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many, many griefs. Now look, there's nothing wrong with earning a profit. There's nothing wrong with income. There's nothing wrong with all of that. We've already understood that. Jesus never condemned this rich guy for being rich, for being talented, for having his barns. It was being all consumed. And you're going, but John, you're not talking to me. I'm not rich. We've already established that. If you drove here in a car today, you're within the 3% most wealthy people in the world. But we live in a culture, a consumer culture of advertising that wants you to think that it's never enough, you don't have enough, you're just getting by, you're just barely there. And I wish I could take you to many places in the world and say, but John, I don't live in those places. I live in America, and in America, well, wait a minute. How long is America going to be around? You know? We are not Americans if we are connected with God. Sure, we are. But it's just like Paul saying, I'm a proud Roman citizen. What has that got to do with today? Rome has come and gone, but his words are still here. Paul's words are here. Why? Because what's most important is what's eternal. And that's the only thing that's going to last for you. And believe me, your own kids will pick up on what is most important in your life. And if you think you can just kind of drag and do the church thing and that it's going to capture their imagination or their attention in their heart, forget about it. It's not going to work. Somewhere, each one of us must make a deep, deep decision like Paul did. Look at this last passage here, Philippians 3. Paul's in prison here, by the way, for actually teaching about Jesus. And here it is. But whatever was my profit, there's a good capitalist word for us, I now consider loss for the sake of Christ. Now, is he saying profit is wrong? No. This is a contrast here. He's saying, look, for what I have gained, what Christ has done in my life, there's just no comparison to anything that this world can offer me. And all these things can be fine, they can be good, but if you're captured by the imagination of that, it's nothing compared to what Christ can do for us. What is more, verse 8, I consider it a loss compared to the surpassing greatness of knowing Christ my Lord, for whose sake I have lost all things. And the last phrase, by the way, so fascinating how, you know, some of you have potty mouths, but you don't do it around church here, okay? Which I appreciate, okay? But Paul did. Okay, and here it is. I consider them rubbish that I may gain Christ. And the word there is skubala. Can you say that word, all campuses with me? Can you say skubala? Ready? Skubala. Shame on you. Because if you really knew what skubala meant, okay, I'll give you a hint. Sometimes you see bumper stickers on the back of a car, and it says skubala happens, okay? All right? That is the actual word here. It's a vernacular. It's kind of a street word that he uses. Why is he doing that? He's really just trying to say, You can have the best Roman via. You can have boats. You can have all the stuff he had in his time. All these things are fine. You can have vineyards. You can have all this stuff. But compared to temporary, compared to eternal, it's skubala. It's all skubala. It's all skubala. So why would Paul say that? Because of the benefit of who Christ is. Look, there's many griefs. There's so much things that happen when people think that the possession thing is going to cause everything to go good. You know, but Paul's understood you can build great relationships, that you can have joy and generosity, contentment and gratitude, and beyond that, eternal life. So that's the choice, really. If you think this life is all there is, eat, drink, be merry. And actually, that was a Stoic quote, eat, drink, and be merry. It's what we hear. But you know what the rest of that phrase is? It also goes with carpe diem. Seize the day, eat, drink, be merry, seize the day. But that's where Americans in the quote. You know what the rest of the quote says? For tomorrow we die. And so your choice is this. We die and that's it. Or there's an eternity. That's the decision we all have to make. And I'm here to say, I love our world. I love the idea of working hard. I love the idea of profit and all those things. I'm so proud of so many of you when you've been successful in areas of your life. But I got to tell you, if you disconnect that and you allow your love for Christ to diminish, it's skubala. It's skubala. And you know what? It's time to get the skubala out of our lives. What do you say? All right. Let's give God a hand, you guys. So we're going to have a word of prayer now, and I turn it over to our campus pastors to pray also.